Senior Manager of Immunization Clinical Services for Walgreens.
Thank you very much, everyone, and thank you for coming today. I gave a presentation Monday about the Walgreens program, and I think it's very typical. Well, maybe not very typical, but it kind of gave you an overall picture of the inner workings of the pharmacy program from our company. In that presentation, I did go through objectives of our program, and Patricia did outline an array of things that we do and on a daily basis. One of our goals of our program was to demonstrate improved immunization rates by proactively cross-promoting additional relevant immunization services. And what I'm going to talk about today is how our pharmacists, in the process of offering and administering the flu shots, also screened eligible patients, found folks that either needed or wanted to receive a pneumonia immunization, and were able to effectively screen and provide these immunizations. So we looked at patients at risk for pneumonia. We segregated them into two groups, the first group over 65, and the second group 64 and under. Traditionally for community pharmacy, because of age and state vaccine restrictions, some states we could not do this, and we focus primarily in the 18 to 64-year-old group. We do not immunize children, so our company policy is not to go below the age of 9 for any vaccine. Under the folks under the age of 64, we focused in on asthma, diabetes, and heart disease, as well as smoking, COPD, and other conditions. We know that pneumococcal disease is very expensive, has a high incidence and a really high mortality rate. And we know that immunization rates are low, and if you look at the high-risk adults, the 18 to 64-year-old group, a huge opportunity there. These numbers did come from our data, and I'll talk to this to show you how that 68% may actually be higher and an underestimate for the senior population. Of course, pharmacists can play a significant role by identifying patients at risk and providing the vaccinations. We have, as Patricia said, over 26,000 immunization-trained pharmacists. They all go through the American Pharmacists Association immunization training. It's a 20-hour course that takes you through all the aspects, both from a clinical and a practical nature of immunizing. And it culminates the 20 hours with a live skills assessment where you don't pass the course unless you've effectively immunized both IM and sub-Q. And we have nearly 8,000 points of care across the country. We are in all 50 states, Washington, D.C., and Puerto Rico. We do our flu shots all day, every day, whenever the lights are on in the pharmacy, which includes, as Patricia said, the overnight stores. So if you're ever up at 3 in the morning and want to get a flu shot, feel free to stop by. Our pharmacists in the overnight shifts are all trained to provide that vaccine, as well as all other vaccines. And, of course, our pharmacists identify and counsel patients at risk, not only for pneumonia but other diseases as well. The objective of the study is to evaluate the impact of Walgreens pharmacists to identify and counsel at-risk patients for the importance of getting a pneumococcal vaccination. We did a retrospective analysis assessing the number of pneumococcal-administered immunizations to at-risk patients who were receiving their flu shots. This is for the current season, so I'll show you the dates in just a moment. All of the data is from Walgreens, and the comparison group is not from Walgreens. I'll show you that as well. We identified all patients with a pharmacy fill for an influenza vaccination. This year we started immunizing in early August. So we, at the time of the study, we went from the 1st of August through the 14th of November. And for the study, to ensure that these were chronically ill patients, we ensured that they had two or more prescription fills in the year prior to the November date. And then we excluded all patients that had received a pneumococcal immunization that we could identify in our prescription histories. We identified those patients 65 years of age and older with prescription fills for chronic conditions. And again, we checked for the presence or absence of the pneumococcal immunization. And then our comparison group was from a benchmark. We actually went out and procured medical data. 1% of all the claims that we received were pharmacy claims, so that's why it does say medical and pharmacy claims, but it's 99% medical claims, 1% pharmacy claims. It shows the breakdown of the populations that we received by age. And here are, for the Walgreens group, we had at the time of November 14th administered over 2 million flu shots. We had identified through our prescription filling process close to 1.4 million of those folks were considered at risk, and 65,000 plus, or 4.77%, had received the pneumococcal immunization at Walgreens. Comparing this to the benchmark group, we did get data over two seasons from the benchmark group, and we were able to get identify 1.2 million members that were at risk over the 2 years. And of that group, close to 35,000 had received a pneumococcal immunization, which is 2.9%. So this just is a chart that shows folks that presented to Walgreens that were at risk and not at risk, and a nice little chart that shows the difference in the two percentages. And it is statistically significant, as my group of outcomes folks have told me to say. Since he's here, I have to say that. So in conclusion, our pharmacist did provide a higher rate of pneumococcal immunizations than the benchmark. And I just want to preface that remark by saying this is a snapshot. So I don't think the importance here is the fact that we did more or less than the benchmark. I think the important thing to note is that we are effective at screening individuals and being able to identify folks at risk and provide the service. So I think that's the takeaway from this snapshot. I do think that the data needs further, I think we need to go further into the data over maybe several years to solidify those percentages. But again, I'd like you to take away today not the percentages so much, but the fact that pharmacists can screen these folks for another condition or a need and be able to provide that service. Pharmacists were successful, again, at identifying those patients and providing the service. Again, we are a trusted resource for immunization services. We can collaborate, and we do collaborate as partners with other health professionals with the ultimate goal of increasing immunization rates, taking care of the patient first. And, of course, community pharmacists can provide health and wellness recommendations and counsel at-risk patients. So that's really fun for us to do. Limitations to this study, as I said earlier, pharmacists do not have equal practice across all 50 states to immunize. For our company particularly, 10% of our store base is in Florida. And in Florida, we cannot provide any other vaccine other than flu. So taking away 10% of our store base and a high percentage of senior populations, we feel that some of our numbers could have been increased had we had the opportunity to provide across all the states. One of the other limitations is the pneumonia vaccine is typically one time for the 18 to 64-year-old group and one time for the 65 and older group. So it is a single service, so you're continually screening folks that may have already had it. And we do not have records outside of the pharmacy system currently to be able to track where they may have gotten their immunization in the past. One of the future enhancements that Phil and his team is working on is to be able to we do have on our Walgreens.com site your immunization records that you've had at Walgreens. A future enhancement will allow you to put in other immunizations so that you can have a permanent record on our website. And again, one of the other barriers for the 18 to 64-year-old group is payment. I know that our friends here talked about that. And, pharmacists, traditionally pharmacy benefits do not pay for both the drug and the administration fee. We're very, very early in the medical billing arena, so we do not have a whole lot of experience and we don't have a lot of plans, so we're very limited there. And that is a barrier when you're asking folks to pay cash for a vaccine. We do find that folks will pay cash for the flu shot, a high percentage of our patients, because there is a threshold that people will pay out of pocket. But once you exceed that threshold, your numbers start to drop as to how much they'll pay. Pneumonia vaccine is more expensive, and it exceeds that threshold. So we do have a barrier there from a community pharmacy perspective. And then, of course, acknowledgments to the team up on the screen, which includes Patricia, and thank all of them very much. And, of course, we have our references, and we'll open this up for questions.
I have a question about this study and the previous one. Are you talking just your pharmacies, or are these your clinics, your retail clinic sections too?
These are pharmacies.
Just
right?
Straight pharmacies.
Right.
Yes.
But you provide immunizations in the clinics too?
We do, yes.
Yes. Actually, for my study, the clinics were able to show that they had provided the pneumococcal immunization at twice the rate that the pharmacies had done. And I think part of that is a larger population and the opportunity to bill more health plans. They have a lot more access to that.
So is the ability for pharmacists to give pneumococcal vaccine related to the scope of practice in that state? And can they work under standing orders if they don't? If it's not in their scope of practice?
Yes, and yes, yes.
So why?
So it's part of our collaborative protocol, number one. In those states where a patient-specific prescription is required, we will call the doctor to get that. If the doctor doesn't want to give it, we will refer the patient to the physician. And we can only provide, as I said, of the close to 8,000 locations, only about 6,000 of the locations can provide the service.
But if the doctor, their primary doctor, won't refer them or whatever, can the medical director in Walgreens or whatever do a standing order for patients?
No, we go outside of our company and get our standing orders from other physicians.
So in states where you're allowed to give pneumococcal to less than 65, the theory is you would, if they come in for prescriptions for like asthma, that would be an alert that would say, offer pneumococcal?
We don't have any formal alerts in place right now. It's pharmacy staff looking at the history of the patient and identifying disease states or inferring disease states, right, and then questioning the customer.
So are you doing that in any state? Are you allowed to do that in any state yet?
The
like give it to a 20-year-old asthma patient?
Yes. Oh, yes. Once we have privilege to immunize for pneumococcal, it's based, minimum age is reflected by the state privilege to immunize or company policy. So in those 6,000 stores, the majority, if not all of them, can do 18 and older. Some can do under.
Raphael Harpa, CDC. Asking any of the panelists, how do you advise the patients that are vaccinated regarding if they want to report adverse events following the vaccination?
Well, if they contact the pharmacy, we'll capture all the information and fill out various reports if it's warranted. If it's a localized reaction, we do counsel them. If it's more than a localized reaction, or it's in a reaction that's gone on for several days, where we don't feel comfortable just with Tylenol or compresses, it's to the doctor or the emergency room, and we don't take any precautions in advising people to go get care. So if there is any kind of thing, we document any incidents that happen with our staff or our customers, clearly documented in our internal systems so that we can track all that and enhance our operations so that it does not continue going forward. And then if there are severe adverse reactions, they're all reported on the VAERS reporting. And that's right from store level, it's done.
Thank you. And the second question, in Pennsylvania, if a patient wants to take the initiative to get a vaccination without the involvement of their physician, is that mechanism fit into your model?
We would prefer them to have a prescription from their physician.
So stating would that they walk in and then you'd call up the physician? Or?
Well, there's standing orders. If the physician that had the collaborative agreement
right.
would warrant that, yes, they would give it.
Okay, thank you. Hi. For the pneumococcal vaccine, did you do a sub-study of why only 5% opted for it to understand the reasons? And if any of these patients, after discussion with your pharmacist, went to the medical clinic to get the vaccine administered by the physician. Was there a phase B on that study?
That'll be phase B. It hasn't occurred yet. It hasn't occurred yet. We felt it important that during the H1N1 pandemic, there was a lot of question about pharmacies' ability to pre-screen. So when the first priority groups came out, there was a lot of question and concern. Could we do this effectively? So we in part one, we wanted to make sure we could demonstrate that we could screen and focus in on different things. And part two will be to dive deeper into the patients.
Hi, my name is Marie Ostojic. I'm Director of Public Health for a small county in the Catskill area of New York. I'm calling from the other side. I'm speaking from the other side. We have a county that has over 600 square miles. We have one Walgreens, and it's well over 3 miles for most of us to get there, just so you get that. Kudos to Walgreens for reaching out for this great outreach. I'd like you to hear the flip side from a local health department. I understand that in order for pharmacists at the local Walgreens to give the vaccination, and in New York State they have to go through the training and all, but in order to go through the training they have to be in collaboration with a physician. And what I understand from some of the pharmacies is that there's a corporate medical director. For example, Walgreens, do I have this right? Mm-hmm. That Walgreens would have a corporate medical director that would then give them sort of the blessing to go forward and take the immunization course.
No.
That's not correct. No. Can you fix that for me?
Yes.
Okay, and I have more parts.
first off, pharmacist training is done on an individual basis. It's part of the scope of practice. So all pharmacists, this starts when they're in the School of Pharmacy. A large percentage of School of Pharmacies now incorporate the APHA immunization training as part of the curriculum before they even graduate. For those of my age group, we take the training through our employer who has offered it, that we have offered it to our pharmacists for the last 5 years, getting up to the critical mass at 26,000, which is just a shy, about 2,500 to 3,000 folks shy of 100%. So this is done separate from our collaborative agreements. The training that we offer our pharmacists is a CDC approved, if you will, and it is mandated by the boards of pharmacy when privilege for pharmacists to immunize is granted. And the APHA training is the first part. Second part is, and it is defined in the Board of Pharmacy statutes, second part is CPR training,
right,
through either Red Cross or American Heart or equivalent, they state, and then, of course, bloodborne pathogen and OSHA training as well.
So where does, I'm a nurse, where does the order for the patient come from?
The order for the patient is from, Mitch, you want to help?
It's not a corporate medical order, that's what I heard.
No, it's not a corporate.
By county?
In New York, it's by county. In majority of the states, we have one medical protocol that covers the states.
And Ed, you did a nice job of describing the training program is a 20-hour training program based on CDC information guidance. It is recognized by CDC for its quality and scope. In terms of the question you're raising, it's a very good question, because ideally the way we overcome these barriers is for the medical director of the local health department to be the one that signs the protocol for the pharmacies. We've got several of those examples there. And so if we're truly wanting to make sure that we overcome a barrier, that's a barrier. Okay, and that shows the collaboration that we can have between pharmacy, public health, and the medical community if we're all working as part of that medical home to serve those patients, getting the medical director of a local health department or state or county, whatever you want it in your area, that's going to be the best way to do it.
So that was what I was really getting at. I'm in a small county, and in my county I can be a director. I have a master's in nursing. With many credits towards masters in public health, but the larger counties have physicians. So we are getting, the fallout is we're getting the local mom and pop pharmacies calling saying, who in your department is going to give me a standing order to immunize all these people that walk into my pharmacy, and I can't help them. Our medical director is also not willing to help them because our county attorney is saying that's out of his scope. So, you know, that's the fallout. So what I'd like to see for places like Walgreens and other pharmacies is to be able to work with those mom-and-pop places. If our mission is really not to make money but to immunize, then we should be working with all those other pieces.
And the only thing that we're doing, what we finally did is we had a nurse practitioner that ultimately in our county, family planning clinic, was able to work with this pharmacist in the mom and pop pharmacy up on the mountain. So we have solved the problem. But I would urge you to reach out, and I'd be happy to help if you have anything.
That'd be great.
Thank you.
Just want to clarify that we do not have our own internal medical physicians that's signing our protocols. It's all within the community, within the state. So in New York, it's per county. So we have agreement with a physician in the county. I don't have his name. Sorry, but I could definitely provide you the name of that physician, so that you have a. Mm-hmm.
And then these protocols that we get are signed annually. They're not evergreen, so we work with an array of folks to help us throughout the country to secure physicians and get the protocol signed.
And just one other point in terms of that collaboration agreement. Pharmacists aren't doing anything differently than what nurses and PAs are doing in their practices as well. They're operating under protocols, collaborations as well. So we use that same model when we approached the pharmacists doing this years ago. That was good. That was the standard that was in the medical community, and that's what we based it on.